You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
It's all about who we are as MC3. And if you were here last week, we talked about why we do MC3 family the way we do. And if you are a part of MC3 and a parent specifically, if you were not here, you got to get onto mc3church.org. Listen to The Point. It's called I Heart Family. It's really important for you to hear this. Not because I'm saying it, but because it just kind of talks about why we do everything that we do at MC3 for your kids and Ignition all tuned up, and you need to hear it. So that's just for what it's worth. But I want to continue this week talking about this idea of I Heart Community. But before I get into that, I need to share sort of some background kind of setup information. So here's a verse that if you grew up in the church, you're probably pretty familiar with. If you've walked into the church for the first time today, it might be the first time you hear it, and we're cool with that either way. But it's a verse in Matthew chapter 28, and if you have you actually don't even need to turn there, because I'm just going to glance through this YouVersion app. You can use that as well. But Matthew 28, 18 to 20, here's the situation. Jesus died on the cross, and he was dead. He died and was in the tomb, buried for 3 days, and then rose to life by the power of God to conquer sin and basically everything we demonstrated here in baptism. And so Jesus is back to life. He is now kind of, he's done his thing. He's met with his disciples. He's been around for give or take 50 days or so after he has risen from the dead. And now he is getting ready to leave. He's going to go back to heaven, back to his Father, back to be sitting in the throne in the presence of God. And so this is what he says. He gathers his disciples together, and a disciple is a follower, and we'll learn more about that in a moment. But he gathers his disciples, his followers together, and says, listen up. Here's the deal. I'm about to leave, and I want to just give you some final instructions. And so in church world, we call this the Great Commission, which is a really long word. But a commission is basically, or two words, it's a commission is something you say, hey, this is what I want you to do. When you're given a task to do, it's a commission. Hey, to my son, I want you to, you know, cut down those weeds. That's his commission. That's the job he was going to do. So this is the Great Commission. This is what Jesus says to his followers. It says, then Jesus came to them and said, and I'm sorry you can't read all those words. He said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. So before he goes any further, he's like, look, listen up. Just in case you weren't sure, you know, the whole coming back to, from death didn't, you know, well, you weren't sure about that. I just want you to know that I do have everything, all the authority on heaven, in heaven and on earth has been given to me. I am the real deal. I am the Son of God. And so what I'm about to tell you isn't just my words. This is the word from the Holy Trinity, God in heaven. He says, all authority has been given to me. He says, therefore, because all authority has been given to me, go and make disciples. And I have that highlighted because make disciples is the main verb in this sentence. I'm not going to get into grammar right now. I know how exciting that would be, but we're not going to do that. I'm sorry. But the thrust of what Jesus is saying is make disciples. He's not focusing on go. He's not focusing on baptizing. The point is make disciples. And the phrase go even means as you're going. Make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. That's a really good idea. We should do that sometime. So, and as Justin already said, baptism was just declaring that people follow Jesus. And a disciple, like I said, is a follower. So Jesus is saying, look, guys, you normal, average, everyday human beings, you are now being given responsibility from the Son of God to do what I have been doing. To do what I spent the last 3 years of my life doing, which is making people that are followers. And he says, you're not making followers of yourselves. You're making followers of me. You're making disciples of me. And a disciple was simply that, was someone that would follow someone around and learn from their rabbi, or is just a Jewish word for teacher. And so, you know, today you might, if you went to, especially if you went to like an apprenticeship, if you had to do an internship in college or something where you had to kind of sit under, say you wanted to be a chef and you went and started working at, I don't know, McDonald's. And you learned how to be an awesome chef under the fry guy at McDonald's. And so you might go and learn from them. And they're going to teach you all the ins and outs of frying, the temperature of the water, when you know it's time to change, or not the water, the oil, when it's time to change. How do you know when the fries are old? You know, when do you add salt? How much salt? And so an apprentice would learn from them and eventually would be able to become the fry master. And so that's what a disciple was someone that would learn that. Now, back during Jesus' time, during the biblical times, the early church time, if someone was a disciple of someone, they would declare that to everyone and be baptized in their name. So today, if you were to be a follower of the fry guy, the disciple of the fry guy, you might go to a prominent location in the city square. You might go up to Monument Square, not on the square, near the square, maybe by Subway or something, or by those picnic tables there. And you would be baptized in the name of the fry guy. Because it says that you to everybody, hey, look, I am now a disciple of the fry guy because someday I want to be a fry master. And that's what a baptism was. It was a way to declare that you are following a teacher, that you are following someone. And so Jesus says, look, I want you to make disciples of me. You human beings, you average, ordinary, sinful guys, you're going to take a message out and it's going to rock the world. And 2,000 years later, we are here because of those 12 guys that Jesus sent out to do that. And we still have that commission. We still have that job to make disciples. He says, make disciples of all nations, followers of me. Baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Baptize them as my followers, not your followers. We're not making disciples of MC3. We're making disciples of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And teach them to obey everything I have commanded you. Teach them, instruct them. And he says, you know what? Just in case you're sweating it, just in case you're like, dude, I'm not God. He says, I'll be with you always to the very end of the age. He said, I'm with you. You have what it takes, and I'm going to be with you to do it. And that is the commission that has been given to us, to the church. And the church is not this building. This building is a garage turned into a place where people worship. It is not a church. You, these people in this water, we are the church. It's followers of Jesus. And so this commission was given to Jesus' followers, to us. He says, look, I want you to make disciples. That is the commission. That is the command. That is the directive. That is the job that we have been given. And so everything I'm going to explain over these next 3 weeks is how we at MC3 are taking that commission and putting it into practice, how we're doing that. So before I go any further, I want to share a couple of things I want you to meet a few people. By the way, everything that I share here is available publicly on a website. I have not gotten personal permission, but since it's on a website for public consumption, I'm assuming they'll forgive me if they ever find out about this. But I want you to meet a couple of people. First of all, I want you to meet Sandy and Jolene. Sandy and Jolene, they are travel specialists. That's the fancy title for them at Kiss Travel over here. I'm not trying to, you know, make any big deal about them. But Sandy and Jolene are travel agents. And I have worked with them on numerous occasions for missions trips for the last, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years. And they've worked with me in terms of getting tickets for planes, for large groups. They've been getting train tickets. We took a train on a mission trip one time. And they have been great. They're wonderful ladies, and they're really great to work with. But what they do, their job as travel agents, is they set up the details for the journey. They will line up. I mean, we even had things like they lined up, you know, how we rented the bus to get to the airport. They scheduled that. They lined that up, and we paid for it. Then they lined up the flight from the airport to where we were going. They got that all set up so that we had the right seats. We had enough room on that plane for our group. Then they lined up the other end, the rental cars that we would have to rent or vans that we would have to rent so that we could get to where we needed to be on the mission field. They lined all those things up. And then they did the same thing in reverse. It was great. We weren't just stuck there. They lined it up on the way back. Drop your rental car off here. This is your flight. You're going to take it this time. You're going to get on the plane. You're all going to fit. And no one's going to have to ride on the wing. And you're going to get back here. And then there'll be a bus there to pick you up. And they will drive you back home. And so they lined up all of those details. It was incredible. And if we had said, hey, you know, can you hook us up with maybe a hotel down there to stay? Now, all of our mission trips, we stay with missionaries. But they could have done that. They could have given us the actual hotel to stay in. They could have lined up some fun things to do. Or if we asked them, I'm sure they could have lined up not fun things to do. I'm sure they could have done it. Because that's their job. They are travel agents. They are to set up the entire trip. But here's the deal. When it came time to leave, Jolene and Sandy didn't go with us. They stayed behind. They said, this is your journey, go. They pointed us in the direction and left us. They abandoned us. But that's their job. Their job as a travel agent is to set it up and, hey, it's your job to do it. You go and do it. Now, I want you to meet a couple other people. Well, you have actually have met them before in a video. But this is Tom and Wendy Hogan. They are the missionaries that we are working with at Trigo y Miel in Oaxaca. And in 2 more weeks, we are going to have an awesome opportunity to present about child sponsorships, how we as MC3, as individual families, can sponsor specific children down at Trigo y Miel in Oaxaca, where Kirk and I went a couple months ago. And we'll also give you some details about an upcoming trip down there. But anyway, we are focusing all of our missionary effort there. But Tom and Wendy, I had never met them personally before our trip back in May. And when Kirk and I went to the airport, we left here, we drove to the airport here, what was it, where did we go, Reagan? Is it Reagan or Dulles? Anyway, we flew out of Washington, D.C., and then landed in Oaxaca with a connection. And when we got there, Tom was there to meet us. And Tom picked us up in his vehicle and drove us over to where we were staying and settled us into our hotel. Which we saw our pictures, was a pretty nice looking hotel. But you won't get that experience if you go with us in a few months. But anyway, took us there. Then the next morning, he got up, he met us for breakfast, made sure that the bill was paid for, we covered our expenses, but he did the work for us, and then drove us around over the next week and took us to different locations, showed us the sites, showed us Trigo y Miel, helped us, introduced us to Victor and Letty, who we do support as a church, Victor and Letty Velasco. He was with us the whole time, so was Wendy. And we even spent one day, we took a morning because they wanted to give us a little bit of the culture. We went to a place called Monte Alban, which is a ruins on top of this mountain. And they called it Monte Alban because it was supposed to be the White Mountain. And on top of that, and there, I mean, dude, we got the tour. We didn't necessarily want the tour. I love you guys. They're listening. But we got the tour. I mean, they were like, did you see this? This little piece of dirt meant this. And they walked us through everything. And see, the deal is that unlike Sandy and Jolene, Tom and Wendy, they weren't travel agents. They were tour guides. They were with us on the journey. They were there with us. They didn't say, just go, there it is, good luck. They said, we're going to come with you. We're going to walk you through it. And when it comes to this idea of discipleship, there are some churches that do it like a travel agent. You need to do that. Go for it. And that's cool. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. It's not as much discipleship in the true sense of the word. But obviously some churches will say discipleship means sitting in a class. That's not biblical. Discipleship isn't making sure that you go on a mission trip 1 year. Okay, once a year, check, you did that. Discipleship is being with someone, walking with them through the journey. Being a disciple, being a follower. And so at MC3, we're not going to be travel agents. We are going to be tour guides. We are here as a church to walk together through this idea of discipleship. To walk on the journey with you as leadership, as people. Nobody's going to be pointing fingers and say, go. People are going to say, come on, here we go. We're going to be holding hands and singing down the yellow brick road together. I mean, we're going to be on the journey together. Maybe not the singing, definitely the holding of hands. Maybe not that either. Maybe not the holding hands, but we'll still sing. We'll figure it out. We'll work it out because it's a journey. You know, we got plenty of time. But that's the idea. I want you to understand that what I'm about to share, this whole process over these next 3 weeks, is that idea of being tour guides. That we are in this together. We are going through the journey together. And just because my title is lead pastor doesn't mean I am any better than any of you. I mean, frankly, it probably means that there's a lot of times I'm worse than you because just some of the crap that I have to deal with, it's hard. And so I want you to understand that we're on the journey together. We're on this together as we go as tour guides. So now, as a church, we know that Jesus has called us to disciple people, to make disciples. And so, okay, what does this mean? How do we do this? How do we go about this? Why are we the way we are? And, you know, some of you might be saying that, like, why are you the way you are in a pleasant way? And some of you are like, why are you the way you are? Ew. But you know, either way, whether you're like, eh, or like, ah, you know, that's who we are, and that's cool. And here is why we are the way we are. And it comes back, as we said, as leadership, as the plant team got together about 2 years ago. What month is this? So, yeah, I mean, We launched almost 2 years ago in October. So, this time, a couple years ago, the plant team got together and said, okay, we know that God has called us to make disciples, and we know that Mifflin County needs people, you know, people need Jesus. People need the hope that Jesus has to offer. And so how can we do that? What has God called the church to do? And how should we do it? So we went back to Scripture and we decided to look at the early church. When Jesus left, he said, you're to make disciples. And then from that moment on, the church was born at an event called Pentecost. The Holy Spirit came and Peter was able to explain, and everybody started speaking in these languages, and the people from other countries could understand those languages. They were like, what's the deal? You can speak my language. You couldn't before. And Peter was like, listen, everybody. Peter's a follower of Jesus. He says, listen, everybody, this is the real deal. God is starting something new. This Jesus that you crucified, he was really polite, that you crucified, he is risen, and he is a message that is going to rock the world. He's got a message that of hope, of salvation, of life. And so that began what we call the church. And so those were followers of Jesus. I said there were thousands of people that were saved that day, that came to follow Jesus that day. And so he said, this is the thing. And so then if you read in Acts, which is all about the story of the church, the very next thing you read after that is in Acts chapter 2. And so you can go ahead and open your YouVersion, go to your app, go to Acts. We'll have lights on if you have paper Bibles. But Acts chapter 2, verse 42. And I said this last week, that if this isn't review for you, you've probably been new in the last, say, 4 to 6 months to MC3. If you've been here from the beginning, this is probably the fourth time we've walked through this. And we're going to keep walking through it because this is what God has called us to do when it comes to making disciples. And this is what it says. This is talking about the early church. It says they devoted themselves, and this word devoted, I want you to understand, it wasn't like they were doing devotions or they prayed or they, it was this idea, the Greek word means to remain, to endure, to give it all you've got. And so this early church, they gave everything they've got to what I'm about to say, to what was written here in Acts chapter 2. And my question here just for you is, are you devoted to the church? Are you devoted to God's mission? Or are you just kind of like, yeah, when I have a chance, when my schedule suits, when it's not inconvenient? Because these people, there ain't nothing convenient about it. Most of them, as I share with each of the people being baptized, the early church, when someone was baptized publicly, they were probably marked for death or prison because the Roman authorities hated Christ followers. And so when you were publicly baptized, they were like, okay, we're going to keep an eye on that one. So, it says they devoted themselves. And so they devoted themselves to a few things. First of all, to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. So it says they devoted themselves to a few things, and we'll come back to what these few things are. But the apostles' teaching, the fellowship, breaking of bread, and the prayer. And then it goes on. There's like a little description of what was going on. This is what they did. They devoted themselves to these things. And then there's a little description. Everyone was filled with awe. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. And I want you to understand this. Those words, wonders and signs, it wasn't the apostles were doing magic tricks. It wasn't like, look at this, you know, watch this, I'll do something, you know, some miracle, I'll start miracling people or doing things like that, which was part of it. But the words here, the word wonders, it means something worth remembering. It was something that was happening that it wasn't just like, wow, did you see that? That guy's hand is healed now. It wasn't like, wow, that's a cool trick. It was that there were things that were happening that were probably way bigger than miracles that were worth remembering. People were like, wow, something big is happening here. Something big is going down. Something significant is going on here. And this idea of signs was something with a promise pointing to God. So they're like, wow, we are watching. Things are crazy here. God is using these apostles, and this message is spreading. People were filled with awe. They were amazed at what was going on. God is doing something new. And I will tell you that is just, that's one of my prayers for MC3. Not the people who are like, look at the magic tricks they do. But the people will be filled with a sense of awe of, wow, God changed my life. God is using MC3 to change this community. I once was blind, but now I see. I mean, there are people, and you shared some of your I Heart My Church stories. There are people in this room that can share crazy, and I am telling you, crazy, Like, that, okay, that's amazing. Stories about what God has done. And that's my prayer, is that, hey, people would be filled with awe because of what God is doing at MC3. So it says that they were filled with awe. The community says all the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to everyone, to anyone who had need. So they were all together. They were in common. It says fellowship earlier. There's this word, this idea of being really connected to one another. They were had everything in common as the same word. That they this wasn't like, hey, I'll see you on Sunday. This was, we are in this together. We are living life together. We are community. They had the idea of that thread being sewn, unraveling is bad, sewn together. And this idea of being connected. And so they said they sold their possessions and gave to everyone as they had need. It continues on. It says every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts, which is the public place, which is where they gathered as a whole group. They broke bread in their homes. So they gathered in homes and had communion together. And they had meals together. That word means a little bit of both. And they ate together with glad and sincere hearts. And this word glad isn't like, that was neat, yay. It was like, it was an idea of praise and worship and going, wow, God is amazing. Wow, God worked through you in my life. Wow, God is doing some incredible stuff. They had glad and sincere hearts. They were praising God. They were worshiping. And we'll come back to all these again in a second. And enjoying the favor of all the people. I love that. The rest of the world, at least the local world, the rest of their Roman area, they were glad that the church was there. They were glad that they were there. They're enjoying the favor. The word favor is charis, means grace. It means they were just having a favorable attitude towards the church. And dude, we've talked about this a lot. We want our community to be glad that we're here. Are people glad that MC3 is here? Are people glad that there are however many churches in this community? Or is people's general attitude toward the church a negative one? Because that's not what was going on in here. This was an issue where people were like, wow, I'm not necessarily buying this God thing. I'm not necessarily into the whole Jesus thing. I might not even show up ever. But man, I'm glad that they're here. And that is my prayer for MC3. That they don't have to buy our whole message, but at least start at that point where they say, wow, there's something about that church. There's something about those people. And I don't know where we'd be without them. It was cool. When we first, and I don't have time to tell the story, but we had a huge flood, not flood, but a water main break the Friday of launch Sunday. It's a long, really, actually another awe moment, sign and wonder kind of thing. Like, wow, how did God work that out? Well, it was really cool. But long story short, we had the township supervisor ended up coming here because he had to check out the water main and make sure we didn't have to pay all this money for sewer. And one of the things he said was that he was really glad that a church would choose to be downtown. That meant a lot to him as the one that's in charge of, or maybe it was the borough supervisor, borough, and was glad that we were here. And I'm like, that's it. That's that attitude. Like, hey, we want them to keep being glad. We want them to be like, oh, man, dang, they keep messing things up, or, oh, I wish they weren't here. We want it to be that idea of everyone being filled with awe and enjoying the favor of all people. And then here's the cool part. It says, the Lord added to their number daily those that were being saved. God was doing something, and this word saved, they were given hope. They were being made complete. It wasn't a get saved, come forward, give your money. It was an idea of these people's lives were being changed, and God was doing it every day through that early church. And that is what we want. That is what I want. That is what we should all want, saying, not that we're counting numbers and saying, look how many people were saved, look how many people were baptized. Nobody cares about that, but we want to see that God is using us to change people's lives. That every day someone's life is being touched because of someone from MC3 sharing that message, sharing that hope, sharing that Jesus is a better way, and not an easy way, but a better way. So, near you, you have a card like this. And again, if you've been here for a couple of years, you probably have like 8 of these tucked in your Bible somewhere. And if you do, that's okay, because I'm all about, this is paper that I'm willing to waste, because it's that important. So if you do not have a card around you, please, like, look around the seats in front of you. There should be enough for everyone to have one. If not, raise a hand and someone around you will get one to you. But what I've got here on this card, and again, we've gone over this many times, and it's something that we designed it to be repeatable. That I want you, if someone says, so you go to that weird church with the black walls, it's in a garage? And you can say, yeah. So what are you all about? Well, let me show you. And that's what I want this to be, something that you can take a napkin, you can take a chalkboard, you can break out a PowerPoint projector and be like, well, please have a seat, as you'll see on slide one. You could do that if you want, but just something that you could repeat that would say, this is what our church is all about, because this is what our church is all about. This is why I Heart My Church is happening this month. That's what we are all about. So it's based on this Acts chapter 2 passage, because God has commanded us to make disciples, to make followers of Jesus. And so how are we doing that? Well, we're looking at what the early church did, and we're going to do it like they did it. The one thing I want you to understand about this is that this is very intentionally a process. And at any point in a process, you can jump in. It doesn't mean you do this, and then you do that, and then you're done. It means you're kind of doing this whole thing constantly. And you might jump in, as you'll see in a moment, you might jump in somewhere a little different on this circle than maybe most people do. And that's okay, because it's designed to be a process. And that's what it was. The Jesus disciples followed him everywhere. And sometimes they did great things. They walked on water. And other times Jesus had to say, get behind me, because you're acting like Satan. So, you know, kind of have both ends of the spectrum there. And that's exactly what it is. This is a process. It's something that this is who we are, and this is how we are going about making disciples. So as you look at this passage, you see, and we're not going to go back to the screen, so you just have to remember what I just read to you. It says they devoted themselves to fellowship. And again, this idea of fellowship was being connected, being intertwined, being woven. That was the word I was looking for. Woven together in community. It says they were breaking bread together. They devoted themselves to prayer. A little bit later it says they were together and had everything in common. It says they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. So these early church people, they were in each other's lives together constantly. And the word for that we often use in our area, and what's also in our name, is called community. And so you have a C1 there, community. Our church, our abbreviation is MC3, because community, County Community Church, is three C's, but it's also our process, because there are three C's in our process. So C1 is community. The early church was together in community. They were connected to one another. They were in each other's lives. So I want you to say community. All right. So C1 is community. We do that as a church in what we call prime groups. Something to the first power is prime, so C to the first power is prime groups. And so we, and I will come to this in a moment, this is our focus today, I'm just still setting this up, that we as a church feel very strongly that everyone connected to MC3 needs to be in a prime group. And you'll see in a little bit why. If you're not really doing the church thing the right way. And I don't mean our church thing, I mean the church thing. So community, that's the first C. That's what we saw the early church. They were in each other's lives. They were connected. They were sharing the good times, the bad times. They were in their homes. They were doing stuff. And so we have prime groups that meet in homes. And again, I'll come back to that in a little bit. Actually, all of this stuff we'll come back to over the next 3 weeks. But that was the first part. Then the second thing we see in there, and this is a cycle, it's a process. It says that they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. It says they gathered together to hear someone teach. To breaking of bread, to communion, to prayer. They gathered together for prayer. It says every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. And I said that was the large setting. You couldn't fit everybody in a home, but in the temple court, everybody could gather together. And it says with glad and sincere hearts, they were praising God together. They gathered together as a large group to praise God. They congregated together. They joined together. And C2 is congregation. And that's what you're in. The worship experience is how we congregate. The early church gathered together as a large group to worship, to be taught, to learn, to grow together. So, I want you to say congregation. That is what we are in right now. We call it the worship experience. We don't call it a service, a worship service on purpose, because none of you are serving right now. Sorry to be cruel. Most of you are sitting right now. So I don't want to use that word for serving. It's not a worship service. And of course, you've heard the joke, you know, oh, what's that? Oh, those are the people that died in the service. Which one? Is it the early service or the late service? Anyway, we call it the worship experience because that's our goal. And it's a reminder that worship is something that we experience. It's something we do. We want you to be moved by God when you come here to worship. We want you to feel like, wow, you know what? I came in one way and I'm walking out a different way. And maybe that's an encouraged way. Maybe it's a little discouraged. Maybe it's a kick in the butt. Maybe it's, wow, this week was awful, but it's so incredible to be able to worship God. And our band works hard at not being the focus of the worship because God is the focus. So the people gathered together, they congregated together in worship. And so that's the worship experience. And then a little bit further on, as you continue this process, it says all the believers had everything in common. And that word common means that they shared their stuff. They sold property and possessions. And they used that money to give to anyone that had need. Think about that. They had land. They're like, oh, you need something? I'll sell my farm. You can have it. And then it said they enjoyed the favor of all the people. And this whole idea was that the early church was known for their caring. For caring for others. If someone had a need, they sold something to meet it. They helped meet needs. Not just within the church, but it said that the whole community, they enjoyed the favor of all the people. And so we call that caring. So stay caring. So C1 is community, C2 is congregation, C3 is caring. And for caring, we have what we call C3 opportunities. And on the fourth week of this month, we will talk about caring and these C3 opportunities. Here's the interesting thing about this. This is what the early church did. And that's what they spent their time doing. And that's what we are spending our focus on as a church. We do not do anything else. Where's the biker ministry? Well, we have bikers, but we don't have a biker ministry. Where's your women's ministry? It doesn't exist. What about the men's ministry? We don't have one. Because everything is tied into these three things, and we're going to focus on doing these three things well and doing them on purpose, because that's what the early church did and how they did it. Now, the cool thing about this, and I love this, this is like when we were developing this whole process, it was just cool watching God work. One of those aw moments, you know, wonder kind of thing. As we were looking at this, we discovered something. And if you draw a line down the middle of this little chart, once upon a time, one of the enemies of Jesus, was trying to trip him up. And they're like, Jesus, since you know so much, he said, well, out of all the laws, and there's hundreds of them, oh good, what is the greatest commandment? What is the greatest one, Jesus? Come on. What is it? And he says, well, to love God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. We talked about that last week with Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 6. To love God with everything you've got. And he says, and the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. That was what is often called in church world. If you grew up in church, you've heard of the Great Commission. And that was called the Great Commandment. Because Jesus said, love God, your first priority. And again, this is what last week was all about. Your first priority is to love God with everything you've got. And your second thing is to love others like you love yourself. Love God and love others. So the cool thing about this is that the worship experience, the C2 side, which way is it? C2 side, sorry, is loving God. And the other side, where we're focused on developing relationships with people and caring for our community, that's loving others. And so as who we are as a church, as MC3, our process for discipleship, that's it. Some people may never come to a worship gathering, to the worship experience. Never. And we're okay with that. Because they might come to a prime group and start connecting with other people that follow Jesus. And maybe God starts to change their heart. Now, we want them to eventually be a part of the worship experience. But it's not necessarily our front door. Some people might not come to the worship experience or a prime group. They might just be served by someone from our church. They might be served in the community by someone. Someone might bring them a meal. And they might say, well, wait a second. I don't know if I'm going to go on. Hey, you don't have to show up on Sunday morning. You don't have to feel guilty. We just want to love you the way Jesus told us to love you. And we'll let God work on that. And then eventually we want them to be a part of a prime group. We want them to come to the worship experience. But it's a process. So people can jump in anywhere in this cycle, and we're okay with that. I want you to know that, because people have said, well, is it okay if people come to a small group but don't go to your worship service? Yeah, I'm okay with that. That's a little different, but that's the way we are. We want people to be a part of this process. And the early church did all three of these things. They didn't just focus on worship. So that is who we are as a church. Community, congregation, caring. C3s. And so we're going to come back to each of these parts over the next this week, next week, and the following week. And so let's start. Now let's start. That was all introductory. Let's start with today's point. Today's point is my church hearts to connect in community. I want to talk about that C1 now. I want to talk about this idea of being this tour guide, not the travel agent. Of being on the journey. We're in this journey together. And I need you guys to guide me sometimes. And sometimes you're going to need me to guide you. And sometimes you're not even going to need me, even though I'm the pastor. You might just need the person next to you. And they're going to help you on that journey. Because that's what community is all about. It's about that relationship, that connection. And so I want to talk about this idea of community for the next couple minutes and why it's important and why we focus on it here. So there's a verse in Hebrews chapter 10. And if you were here during our relationships series, we talked about the first half of this verse. It was the very last week of the series. And I believe it was called Step Up. It's available at mc3church.org if you want to listen to the point there. But it's called Step Up, and we looked at the first part of this verse. And the writer of Hebrews is writing. We don't know who wrote Hebrews, but it was someone writing a letter to people that were Jewish people that were now part of the church. They were part of this process that we were reading about in Acts chapter 2. They were in. And this writer was reminding these people of a bunch of different things. And our whole hero series over the last 2 months was about Hebrews chapter 11. So that was a little bit later. That came out of Hebrews 11. But here in Hebrews chapter 10, there are a couple things that the writer wrote, I guess. And he wrote, or she, could be a she, but probably a he, but it could be a she. We don't know who. Maybe it was an alien. Regardless, the writer of Hebrews, I'm just messing with you. We don't know who wrote it. That's what I will say. Says, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. And so looking at this passage and talking about this idea of community, how the early church met in homes, they broke bread together, they shared meals, they had everything in common, they enjoyed fellowship, this idea of being together, of connection, of community. I want to draw out three things from this as we look at this idea. First thing is that community is intentional. Community is intentional. It's not an accidental thing. And when you talk about how we describe community, now you're all part of a community. We live in the Mifflin County, greater Mifflin County community. If you're in school, you're in your, you know, Mifflin County High School community, or, you know, there's communities at work. There's gatherings of people that are in each other's lives. But when it comes to this idea of church community, it's intentional. And that's exactly what the writer says. He says, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. And I said this when we taught this a couple months ago, that this word consider means to be intentional. It means take time to think about it. It's an intense thinking. The Greek word is katanaioio, like that. Okay? So you can repeat that. It means to contemplate, to think about, to let it simmer, let's be intentional about how we can spur one another on towards love and good deeds. We need to be intentional about helping others. We need to be intentional about being in each other's lives. We need to be intentional about saying the things that need to be said, even if they might be hard. We need to be intentional about encouraging other people. When you see them do something, encourage them. Be intentional. Community, this connection idea is an intentional thing. It's on purpose. It's not by accident. And that's what the writer of Hebrews is saying. He says, let us consider, think about it, contemplate, chew on it, make a big deal about how we can spur one another on. If you were there that Sunday, I wore chaps and boots and spurs and the whole cowboy hat because I am a cowboy at heart. Yeah, not. But I look not that kind of cowboy by any means. Eric Kress, tonight the Giants are going to take someone down. But anyway, I have the mic, you don't. Anyway, You completely, okay, yeah, we're spurs. So we're talking about the idea of a spur is used to move a horse forward. And that's what he's saying here. Let us consider, let's think about how can we spur one another on. And it comes from this idea of community. And he goes on and says that with the next thing, and that is that community is regular. Community is intentional, and community is also regular. It's something that happens often. It's like a good laxative. Maybe not the best word picture, but it's regular. It's something that happens regularly. And that's what the writer says. He says, you know, not giving up meeting together. We're not giving up. We need to think about being intentional about how we can spur one another on. And that means that we don't stop meeting. Because he says, apparently, some people were in the habit of not meeting. They're like, I don't need this thing. And we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. But he says, no. This is a regular thing. This is a for real thing. This is something you need to be intentional about doing, and you need to be doing it regularly. He says, you need to be in people's lives. You need to be in each other's lives regularly. Not when it happens. Not accidentally. Not sometimes. And not even just once a week. Regularly in each other's lives. Not giving up meeting together. Don't stop. Do it. Meet. Spend time together. In the early church, Acts chapter 2, they were in each other's homes. It says every day. It says every day they met in the temple courts. We're going to give you a break from that. You know, we'll just do this once a week on Sundays. But this idea of being in each other's lives is a regular thing. And please hear me. Are you saying like every day we should be talking with other people that are brothers and sisters in Christ? Yes, I am. Are you saying we need to be intentional about spurring them on every day? Yeah, I am. We need to be in each other's lives. It's community. It's being connected. It's being woven together. You guys would be very disappointed if some of my clothing became unwoven right now. But the fact that they're all sticking together every moment of every day is a good thing. I'm glad too. And that's this idea of being woven together. It's being connected together. So it needs to be intentional. It needs to be regular. And I want you to understand that community is necessary. You need it. You need it. Oh, no, I'm okay. No, you're wrong. You need it. It's necessary. The author continues on and says, continue meeting together, but not giving up meeting together, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day approaching. And this encouraging word, it's not just an accidental thing. It means, it's a Greek word that is called paraklete, parakaleo. And you don't need to know that word, but you need to know what the word means. A paraklete was someone that would come alongside of a person. When it says encouraging one another, it says paracleting one another. Coming alongside of them, being with them through it. I don't know if you guys remember, I think it was like the 1992 Olympics? I don't even remember, but it was a ways, way back. And there was this guy who was a runner. I don't even know what he was running. It was a race. It was on a track. So that meant something. And he was from a country. So got that narrowed down for you. A guy running a race on a track from a country in the Olympics. And as he was running, suddenly he pulled his hamstring. Do you guys remember this? And he dropped to the ground. And he starts to get up because he wanted to finish the race. And comes shooting out of the stand, shoving aside a security guard, was this guy's dad. Do you guys remember this? Anybody remember this scene? If you can't YouTube it, I'm sure it's there. And he comes out of the stands, pushes the security guard aside, and comes alongside of his son, picks him up, and the two of them hobble across the finish line together. And it was a beautiful scene. You can't write that in a movie. Like, it was for real life. And that is exactly what a paraclete is. That's exactly what he's saying. When we encourage one another, we come alongside one another because you can't do it on your own. On the loop, there's a U2 song that says, sometimes you can't make it on your own. And you can't. I would say all the time, you can't make it on your own. We need each other. We need to encourage. We need to paraclete one another. I need you to carry me because there's times when both of my hamstrings are pulled and my feet fall off and my head's probably gone somewhere too because I don't know what's up with me sometimes. And I need you to come alongside of me. And you need your brothers and sisters in Christ. You need the church to come alongside of you. You need that community because you can't do it on your own. And that is why this is so important. Community is intentional, it's regular, it's necessary. We do this on purpose. Your church, my church, hearts to connect in community because we need it. We need these relationships. We need it. So let me, as we're finishing up here, let me share with you five people that you may encounter who don't need community. Five people that don't need community. And this might be maybe someone that you see regularly. Maybe someone that you sit next to. Maybe someone you share a car with. Maybe someone you see in the mirror. But five people that don't need community. They don't need everything that we've talked about. First of all, there is self-sufficient Sam. And that could be Sam the man or Sam the woman. So feel free to use your appropriate version there. Self-sufficient Sam. And self-sufficient Sam doesn't need community because they don't need anyone. I don't need people in my life. I am fine on my own. And there are a lot of people that live that way. There are a lot of you that are trying to live that way. Oh, no, I'm cool. I'm good. I can do this on my own. I mean, and it might not even be just a shallow thing. Like, I read my Bible every day. I'm listening to music that I should be. And I don't need you guys. I am good on my own. And I want you to know that that is not true. It's a lie. I don't care how spiritually mature you are. I don't care how old you are. I don't care how tall you are or how far you can throw a football. Doesn't matter. I don't know why that one fit in there, but it seems like it's right. You need other people. There is no such person as self-sufficient Sam. You aren't able to do it on your own. And the funny thing is that if you think you are, there's a huge blind spot that you're missing. I have to ask my kids or my wife, like, when you're bald, dude, I don't know, like, hair is so important. And you're like, oh, that might be funny. It's serious. Love your hair. If you've got it, love it. Say thank you, hair. Because when you're bald, like, I don't know how many times what would normally be like, oh, I might have bumped my head, becomes like this gash that I'm bleeding for 4 days. And there's a lot of times that I can't even tell because I can't see here. I tried once. I can't. It doesn't work. I can't see there. I need someone else. I need my kids to be like, Dad, you got blood all on the back of your head. Thank you so much. I'll clean it up. Because we have blind spots, and the self-sufficient person doesn't exist. You have blind spots. I have blind spots. We need each other. You need that. So the second person that doesn't need community is worthless Wanda. Or you can call it worthless Wally if you're a guy, if you know someone that's a man that's in this condition. Worthless Wanda says, well, I don't really need community because I don't have anything to offer. I mean, I haven't been following Jesus very long, so what can I help someone else with? Or, I mean, everything I've done has just been mistake after mistake after mistake. There's no way I can help anyone. And worthless Wanda, worthless Wally says, you know what? I've got nothing to offer. And I want you to understand, if you're worthless Wally or worthless Wanda, that is not true. Everything that God has brought us through, that God is doing in our lives, whether it's good or bad, He can use it. And maybe your worthless, your mistakes, your poor choices are exactly what someone else needs to hear so you can say, don't do what I did. There is no such thing as a worthless Wanda or a worthless Wally. We need each other. You have something to offer, no matter who you are, no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been, no matter how young, old, mature, immature, you've got something to offer. There's no such thing as worthless Wanda. Then there's busy Barry or busy Betsy. This person doesn't need community because they just don't have time. You know, maybe I'll get together with some other people. I've got so many things going on right now. I'll get to it in a couple months. And this is the person that's just busy. And I want you to understand that this is worth the investment. You need it. And so I would strongly suggest that you drop off of the team. That you change the work schedule. That you do everything you possibly can so that you're in community. Because you can't do it on your own. You need it. So busy doesn't work. Sorry, Barry. Sorry, Betsy. But too busy doesn't count. You need community. I mean, it'd be like saying, well, you know, I don't have time for breathing right now, so I'm just not going to do it. And if my wife were here, she would get on my case because I often skip eating. That's my thing. If I'm too busy, I don't eat. And then eventually I'm like, I can't move. It's just because you haven't eaten in like three meals because I get too busy for it. I need to eat. No matter how hard I try to say I'm busy, I need to eat. And I do a lot, you can tell. But it's important, and there's no such thing as busy Barry or busy Betsy. You need community. Then there's private, what do I have, private Polly or private Pete. This person doesn't need community because if I'm like in a group, a prime group or some art, they're going to like find out about me. I don't want to talk. Am I going to have to talk? I don't want to do that. I don't want to open up. And I know that might be hard if you're a private person. I'm not talking about like hanging out with Justin, but something that, okay, he's not crying. Yeah, I don't mean like, it doesn't have, you don't have to like share everything. Like Justin and I talk about a lot of things that are very deep and personal at a lot of times. You don't have to do that, but just at least say, you know, hey, I struggle. Sometimes I don't do everything the way I should. That's a step. But you can't let, oh, I'm a private person, I don't share with anyone. You can't let that be an excuse. You need to share. You need to let people in because you need other people. So private Polly, private Pete doesn't exist. And finally, there's Sunday Steve or Sunday Sarah. And this person thinks that what you're doing right now is church. And so if you show up and do this thing on Sunday morning, show up at 10 o'clock or 10:15, whatever, punch your card, you did your thing, get out of here as soon as it's over, then you did your church thing. You are wrong. Your theology is wrong. This is a worship gathering for people to worship God. This isn't church. Church is the people. We are the church. We need to be in each other's lives. And so if you think that just by showing up on Sunday you're good, you're wrong. That's awfully bold for me to say. Yes, it is. You need to be in a prime group. You need to be in a small group. You need to be connected with other believers. Because just sitting in a worship service, that's not even really, I mean, yeah, we hope that it's changing your life, that God is speaking through me, that God is speaking through the music and all the things that we do and the incredible stories of baptism. That's all good, but that's not relation. That's not connection. That's not community. That's you and God and worship, and that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. We'll talk about that next week. But that's not community. You need to be connected to other people. So Sunday Steve and Sunday Sarah, sorry, you're wrong. That's not the way it works. So how do we do that? We do that through prime groups at MC3. I said that already. You need to be in a prime group. The way our prime groups work, if you're new to this, is every prime group has a leader and every prime group has an apprentice, or they should. And the idea is that the leader, and we use this phrase a lot, and some people kind of weird it out by that, and that's cool, but the leader is the shepherd of that group. And that means that that leader, if there's some things that they need to do differently than some of the other groups, that is cool, because you're the shepherd. They're the shepherd. They're the ones that are making that decision. Maybe it's when they meet, where they meet, what happens on a given week. But they're the shepherd of that group. And then they have an apprentice that is working alongside of them, that is being discipled by them, that is doing this process that we've already talked about. And the goal is that when that group, as it grows, there's going to be a point where it's going to split. And that apprentice is going to become the new leader of a new group, or a part of that group, I should say. And then they're going to, you know, appoint an apprentice that will become the leader. And so at this point, I think we've got, what, seven or eight groups right now. We started with 3 or 4. So we've doubled in 2 years. And the goal is to keep doing that because the groups need to stay small so you have that connection. You'll see that in a moment on a video. And what happens in prime groups is that Brian, who works his tail off, puts together, as our prime group coordinator, puts together a discussion guide based on what I teach. And so we talked last week about the point and how we do the same thing over and over and over with the kids. Do the same thing with the adults. It's a chance for you to discuss what we talk about in here. Because right now you really have a chance to discuss it. It's a chance for you to kind of say, okay, this is what Sean said, or the teacher, whoever's teaching, said. And now how does that work in my life? How does that apply? And so that's what they're doing in prime groups. They're discussing that. The groups meet at different locations. Usually the group leader is the host. That's not the rule. It doesn't have to be that way. And they meet at different times. Groups will meeting at different times throughout the week. We don't meet on Monday nights. We leave that night open because that kind of gives us a chance to do things church-wide if we need to. But they meet at different times. They all have a different feel. Like, I'm a nerd, so my group's a little nerdy. Kirk is a party animal. His group is a party. Okay? That's just the way it is. And I'm cool with that. And if you come to my group and you're like, hey, I like Star Wars, and you know, then cool. And not that everybody, my group is a nerd. I'm the nerd. Please. I won't be beat up afterwards as the nerd. But you know, they're different. And that's okay. We're okay with that. But they're still getting together and saying, we're in community. We're connecting together. They're going to begin the week of October 6th because the fifth Sunday event is geared for prime groups this year. It's called The Amazing, and there's C1 in there, race, C1. Because we want everybody to have a fun time in a prime group. So if you want to be a part of the fifth Sunday, and this is really mean, you need to be in a prime group. You need to sign up for a prime group to be a part of our fifth Sunday. Because we're going to be broken up into prime groups and having some amazing race type events together. And it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be really good. So you need to be in a prime group. It's really important. It's part of who we are. It's the core of who we are. So if you've been coming to MC3 for 10 minutes, well, you've probably been here a little longer than that, and you're not in a prime group, you need to sign up for one. If you've been here for a couple of years and haven't signed up for a prime group, you need to be in a group. There are sign-up sheets out there. As soon as you leave at that info table, Brian is going to be out there, and we'll be there to talk to you about the groups, when they meet, where they meet. And everybody, by the way, needs to re-sign up. We'd like to update your information. There is no rule. You're allowed to switch groups. There's nothing wrong with that. We don't force that because we want you to develop relationships together. But there's no hard feelings, and all the leaders are aware of this, that if you choose to go to someone else's group, whether it's a scheduling issue or party animal versus nerd issue, whatever, that's okay. But we want you to be a part of that.